Time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
The actor and writer Brian Blessed probably first sprang into the consciousness of people who watched television in the 60s when he played P.C. Fancy Smith in the long-running Z-Cars. He was Caesar Augustus in I, Claudius, Old Deuteronomy in Cats. Brown has done a great deal of Shakespeare, both on stage and screen, and was Prince Vulturn in Flash Gordon, Richard IV in Blackadder. Not only are Brown's looks memorable, but his voice has regularly been employed in voiceovers. And talking of looks, Brown, if I may, I've been reading your Dynamite Kid, and you did cause some consternation in that department when you were born.
Yes, yes, I looked appalling. I mean, I was born and my mother said, God, he looks like a toad. Hence the name of the chapter in my book. I didn't want to come into the world and they used forceps to pull me out. So my mouth, which is still quite large, my beard covers it. It's quite a wide mouth, very toady. And as pulled out, my eyes wouldn't open. And when my father saw me, he just looked at me and said to my mother, couldn't you do better than that? And my mother kind of ignored me. And so I remained like that for several days. And the nurses said, well, no, he's a bit overcooked. But just wait. When he opens his eyes, he might have lovely eyes. And my eyes opened and they then said at the time, he dark brown eyes. Oh, but he has lovely eyes. He'll break a lot of hearts. My mother avoided seeing people in the village and dodged into alleyways so that people couldn't see me. And then after about 8 weeks, my hair grew, and it was blonde, actually. It was curly blonde hair, and I became a very handsome baby.
This was a sort of mining society, wasn't it?
Yes, I lived in Guildford, but it's halfway between Doncaster and Barnsley. They were wonderful years. Mm. My father was a coal hewer, which he removed 17 tons a day. All the miners in Probert Avenue in Goldthorpe went in shifts to the coal mines. We had Doncaster 8 miles away and Barnsley 8 miles away in between. And we had two lovely cinemas and we had wooden radios. Mm. The coal miners were all kind of educated. Mm. They loved music. I mean, we had then the BBC Light Programme, which of course had lots of drama on it, Curtain Up and Dick Barton's Special Agent and Paul Temple. And then we had the Home Service, which had Saturday Night Theatre and documentaries. And then, of course, we had the third programme. We were deluged with classical music. So what an education, this wooden radio. And they were exciting times in the war years. And, I mean, my dad was a great hero. My mother was wonderful, like all mothers are. Wonderful neighbours. And everyone shared everything. The extraordinary thing was I used to beg a lot. Though my father was in the coal mines, it was hard getting food. And my aunts worked in the factories, in the black market, you might say. And at least once a week, I'd have to go over there as a little 6 or 7 year old and beg 4 ounces of sugar and coffee and soap and things like that. So they were hard years, but we didn't have any money, but we weren't poor. There was a richness about society.
And this first music, I think, comes from that listening to the radio.
Well, the acting in particular was fantastic. They won lots of awards. And they had Captain Blood, which was intriguing, about the Spanish Main. And I remember when Captain Blood finally was defeated, I give you my sword. I now surrender. I, Captain Blood, surrender. And we had this wonderful music from Walton, you know, which was the first symphony, which made my hair stand on end. It was the Spanish Main. I wanted to go to the Spanish Main. I wanted to go to the Mediterranean. It made me want to explore the world. Wonderful Walton visionary music.
Thank you. Music from Walton's First Symphony in B-flat minor. That was part of the fourth movement, and we heard the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Vladimir Ashkenazy. Now, I was fascinated to see, Brian, that you were stretched as to which depiction of dawn you were going to use, because I know there are at least two that you really love.
Yes, I love the sea. I remember I came from Yorkshire, and I came from halfway between Doncaster and Barnsley. I dreamt of the sea, and eventually I saw the sea. My Uncle George up there knew him by the sea, and I saw, at 6 years, 7 years of age, this long line of blue against the blue sky. And my dad said, "That's the sea, that's not the sky." And the magic of it. Therefore, Benjamin Britten, I remember, I wasn't a great friend of Alec Guinness, but he once came in my dressing room, Guinness, and he put his head in my lap with tears in his eyes. And he said, "I've just heard dawn, Benjamin Britten, Brian, my heart has stopped, Brian." And he wept uncontrollably. And I rather shared this about Britten, so they're a very hard choice. But my soul vibrates with exploration. When I was a little boy in my little council house overlooking the Seven Fields, I'd have Patrick Stewart, who was a few years younger than me, sitting there while I would tell him stories, and he would sit there with wide eyes. And I dreamt of going to the Lost World. We'd heard the Lost World on the radio. Arthur Conan Doyle's A Lost World. And then it existed. It's Venezuela, Brazil, and all that. I remember putting Patrick opposite me on the bed and looking at him, and I had my little old broken down lovely Bush radio and my 78 record, and I'm going to play you something. I'm going to take you to South America. And I said to him, "You know what I dream of, Patrick? I look through my window here and I become a Yorkshire condor, a black condor, and I fly across the Seven Fields and I go across the Yorkshire Moors and I go across the Irish Sea and I go on and on down the Atlantic and I go towards the Americas and down the Eastern Seaboard past New York and on, and I arrive in South America and there's Chimborazo and Cotopaxi in Ecuador, the great volcanoes, and I dive down, and go round the volcanoes and head further. There's Venezuela, there's the Lost World, and then on to Green Mansions, and there is Brazil, the ocelot, the cod, the anaconda, and these blue morpho butterflies fluttering amongst blue flowers. Oh, dawn of these green emerald forests, glorious Brazil. I want to go. And I put this music on.
It's magical.
Well, God, I'm glad I'm doing this programme. I'm quite moved by that. That brings tears to my eyes. I remember that both Debussy and Stravinsky said it was the most beautiful piece of French music ever written, which is wonderfully generous, but I actually went to the Lost World because of it eventually. I climbed Aconcagua, the highest mountain in the Western Hemisphere, 23,000 feet high. And then, of course, I went to Brazil and then made my way to the Lost World of Arthur Conan Doyle, Roraima, and achieved this dream.
Levé du jour, from the second Daphnis and Chloe suite by Ravel, we heard the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Louis Frémaux. Animals. You talked so wonderfully about birds there, Brian, and I know animals have been very important to you. And in fact, you, at one point in your life, went round collecting up animals that somehow, through Harrods, had come into people's possession and really didn't belong in a domesticated situation.
That's right. There was a time in the 60s, you know, that I think along Attenborough did the same, and rescuing wild animals. You could go to Harrods and they would brag that they could get you an elephant or a lion or anything in the world. Mm. And therefore, people are hundreds of wild animals. And they had lions in their cellars and tigers in their cellars and mountain lions. And I had a large house in Richmond. And I had quarantine in the back garden, which the government gave me. And I rescued them and I sent them back to the country of origin. And cheetahs and things like this, and ocelots, margays, golden cats. And it was part of me kind of really working for the World Wildlife and Whisper in saving animals throughout the world.
We were talking about brass just now, and how it warmed that canvas. And I know that you love fanfares and things. If you'd had endless time, we'd have had some Arthur Bliss fanfares.
Yes, I've always loved fanfares.
Well, I think this piece, which is the first movement of the Janáček Sinfonietta, is a most stirring and fabulous use of brass and timpani, isn't it?
Yes. I was searching for composers where I could hear a different sound. I listened to Janáček's Taras Bulba and was quite frankly disappointed. Who am I to be disappointed? But I find it diffuse. And suddenly, when I put the Sinfonietta on of Janáček, the originality of the sound was what I was looking for. They were so unusual and original. Where did that come from? Where was that in the man's heart and mind? It's almost like Shakespeare, the one line in Macbeth that people don't often quote is, light thickens, light thickens if I could live a million years to say I'd written that. Shakespeare wrote that. The Janáček, where did it come from?
The Czech Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Václav Neumann, playing the opening of Janáček's Sinfonietta. I don't know if you know the Janáček operas, Brian, or even if you're interested in opera, because, of course, that is a
very
marriage
much
of your trade and mine, as it were.
Indeed, yes, yes. I mean, I just adore opera. And, of course, one was brought up on, you know, Gilly, etc., and Björling, and so forth.
And actually, the composer we're going on to is someone who created, again, his own vision of what opera might be.
Yes, I developed a love of Wagner at a very early age, and I was criticised for it. So that I get different teachers saying, well, it's about time you looked at Haydn, it's about time you looked at Mozart, and get your head around this, and get your head around that. Mm. And you're expressing a great love of Wagner for this, that and the other, and that's crude. Mm. It's vulgar. Wow, it was the first time anyone said anything disagreeable to me about classical music. But I wasn't put off. It was an amazing time for me. I was 16 years of age. Patrick Stewart was 14. Patrick was always my friend. There was a week's drama course in the Col du Valais. We were, you know, working-class boys. And some of the world's best teachers were there teaching drama that week, putting on scenes from plays. And we arrived there full of excitement to meet these people in the Col du Valais in South Yorkshire, the Bronte country. And I was walking down the corridor after a few days, and this man's voice, Raphael Shelley, great movement teacher, a great drama teacher with a wonderful voice, said, "Can you speak the music?" I've never tried, sir.
"I want you to be God in the Misty Cycle play, The Judgment Day. I want you to be God. And listen to this."
And at the time, I was very deeply in love with a young lady called Nancy Marshall. And everything was miraculous and new. And they put on this music. And my heart and my soul reverberated. I have never heard violin strings with such heavenly sounds. And I did the voice of God to it.
What I think is extraordinary about the last bars of that extraordinary music is that Wagner has the complete confidence that at the end, the final moment is virtually an exhalation. So he doesn't have a huge chord with masses of drums. He lets it just suddenly fade.
Yes, beatific music, absolutely astonishing, astonishing music.
We heard the final moments from Wagner's Götterdämmerung. And Rita Hunter was the soprano with the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Sir Charles McCarris. Again, Brian Blessed, Rita Hunter is another rather larger-than-life character that brings extraordinary power. Well, like Jesse Norman, these singers that have these wonderful voices.
Yes. When I was at drama school, they almost took me away from drama school. I wanted to attempt to La Scala Milan to be a dramatic tenor, not a baritone, not a bass. Oh, Brian's got a deep voice. No, there's a darkness in my voice, but I'm tenor. It's here. And Birgit Nielsen came to Bristol, and she came there with Nicola Gedder, and they came to the school, and Mrs. Moody, the Welsh teacher at the school, said, I've got a boy here I think may have to give up acting. And I'd never sung before in my life. I'd only been singing 5 weeks at the drama school, Bristol Vic. And I met Nielsen, and I sang with her and Gedder, and Gedder said, you leave now, and you come to La Scala, Milan. You are not a lyrical tenor. You are dramatic tenor. You are Wagnerian tenor, the toughest and hardest of all. But I couldn't do it because it wasn't a must. I loved opera, but it wasn't a must. Acting was a must.
Talking of being transported to other worlds, I think that our next piece is Other World.
Yes, indeed. When I was 6 years of age, at a wonderful infant school in those war years, Mrs. Gummersall suddenly described that there were other worlds besides the Earth. And that was beyond my comprehension at six. And she talked about Mars. And I painted it red on a piece of paper. And I went inquiring everywhere. At the age of six, the planets besotted me. We had, of course, on the ad on the radio, we had the War of the Worlds and Mars. And then, of course, I heard hosts, planets, when I was about 8 or 9 years of age, on the third programme. And Mars was always wonderfully dramatic. So therefore, me, my biggest love, I've just completed space training in Moscow. I, Brian Blessed, I have been there and in Space City with Putin watching. I've done 800 hours and I'm now a fully trained cosmonaut at my age. Because my love of space is my biggest love. And I've got the poem here, we learned when I was 6 years of age. And before we used to listen to Neptune the Mystic, I would recite this to the class. It's a stanza from John Masefield's Lollingdon Downs. I could not sleep for thinking of the sky, the unending sky with all its million suns which turn their planets everlastingly in nothing. Where the fire-haired comet runs. If I could sail that nothing, I should cross silence and emptiness with dark stars passing. Then, in the darkness, see a point of gloss burn to a glow and glare and keep amassing and rage into a sun with wandering planets. And drop behind. And then, as I proceed, see its last light upon its last moon's granites die to a dark that would be night indeed. Night where my soul might sail a million years in nothing, not even death, not even tears.
It really does take one beyond the sort of immediate universe somehow.
Yes, it does. And beyond, of course, is Pluto. And they think is Charon, the little moon of Pluto. But then they're thinking that is a small planet. And Cassini and Huygens has been out there. And we've got a European Space Commission now. And we're working on Skylon in Oxfordshire, our British space plane. And so we can kind of go out there. I often said to my father, I miss space. I feel I need to go home. I don't think that we just belong here, that we are the children of stardust, and that we belong out there. And the Earth is a mother, Gaia principle. She'll fertilise some of the planets and some of the moons, but holds captures such power and dynamism and an incredible feeling of the mystique.
Neptune the Mystic, from the Planets, Opus 32 by Holst, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, conducted by James Levine. Well, Brian Blessed, from something which actually was taking us almost into a kind of floating free sensibility, we now go to something which has absolute, unfailingly inexorable sense of progress and forward momentum.
Yes, but I kind of chose it when, again, going to Yorkshire, when I was 16 years of age, going 17, I was cast first of all as Heathcliff in the Bronte Festival, Wuthering Heights, and then I was cast as Branwell, and probably Branwell Bronte, the brother of the Bronte sisters, is maybe the best thing I've ever done, and got lots of awards. Everyone wept and wept and wept. I couldn't stop my father weeping when I died as Branwell Bronte. I was put in charge of the music by a wonderful director called Harry Dobson, who rescued and developed all the young people in Yorkshire. Thank God for him. He said, come on, lad, you know you've developed a tremendous sense of music. And I didn't quite know what to choose for the Brontes and the death scenes and Emily's death scene as well. And suddenly Mr. Kemeny from the school said, Sibelius. And then I studied and studied Sibelius. And I selected different aspects of it. But for me, it was always the second symphony, the last movement, this triumphant theme of power. And it reminded me of the Moors. It reminded me of Wuthering Heights. It reminded me of the north side of Everest and all the northern mountains and the Maelstrom and the great volcanoes that I've been to and all the great forests. He has such kind of atavistic sophistication. I always feel with Sibelius, he is a primitive, and with this primitive, there is nothing more sophisticated than the primitive. And he brings that out. His music seems to relate to the past and to the present and to the future. That he embraces everybody, from Stravinsky to Mozart to everybody. And there's a staggering theme. You think when it comes to the last movement, it will stop. You're waiting for it. It never quite makes it from movement to movement to movement. And it eventually makes this theme at last. It completes the gallop. This immense gallop. Which was kind of the death of Branwell Bronte for me, but it has a triumph and a rejoicing, transcending death. And it was this that absolutely shocked me and possibly might be my most favourite piece of music. it goes on and on. You don't think it will stop. How can he keep going on? How can he keep ascending and ascending? It reminds me of Emily's lines, which fitted the music so wonderfully. No coward soul is mine. No trembler in the earth's storm-troubled sphere. I see heaven's glory shine, and faith shines equal, arming me from fear. That's Emily. And as she died, she said it.
That was the finale from the Symphony No. 2 in D, Opus 43, the closing pages by Sibelius. And we heard the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Simon Rattle. Well, thank you very much, Brian Blessed, for taking us through this musical accompaniment to your life and the music that you really loved.
I've absolutely loved it. It's just what I've needed. There's so much claptrap in the world today. It's been a wonderful, happy experience. I'm indebted to you for a fabulous programme.
The inimitable Brian Blessed was talking to Michael Barclay. Next week at the same time, Michael's guest on Private Passions will be the children's author Judith Kerr. That's next Sunday at midday. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3. The producer of today's programme was Sarah Cropper.
On BBC Two.
I looking on the praise of him, see riot and dishonour stain the brow of my young Harry.
The rise and fall of a dynasty.
Send danger from the east and to the west, so honour cross it from the north to south, and let them grapple.
Think not, Percy, to share with me in glory anymore. Two stars keep not their motion in one sphere.
Shakespeare Unlocked. The Hollow Crown continues with Henry IV Part 1 next Saturday at 9 on BBC Two.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting on 90 to 93 FM on digital radio, and you can also listen to us live online in high definition sound. In a couple of minutes, the early music show. Lucy Skeeping today with highlights from a concert given at Durham Cathedral by the Tallis Scholars, the music by Gabrieli, and new pieces written for the Tallis Scholars. First, though, at 1 o'clock, a summary of the news read by David Cornett.
David Cameron has suggested that there could be a referendum on Britain's relationship with the European Union. But Downing Street has stressed that any vote would not be held at the moment. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, has said the government would only consider holding a referendum after the impact of the Eurozone crisis became clearer, so that voters could have what he called a real choice. Labour say the Conservative Party's approach to Europe is shambolic. The Business Secretary, Vince Cable, has urged shareholders in British banks to get a stronger grip on weak boards and out-of-control executives. Mr. Cable has also criticised the governance of leading banks, saying it was lamentably weak. The Kenyan Red Cross says that 16 people have been killed in attacks on two churches. Shots were fired and grenades were thrown into the churches in Garissa, a town on a road to Somalia. There have been several attacks in Kenya since the country launched an offensive inside Somalia last year against the Islamist group Al-Shabaab. The main Syrian opposition group has said there are positive elements in a new plan calling for a transitional government in the country. But a spokesman for the Syrian National Council added that the plan, which was agreed at an international meeting in Geneva yesterday, was too vague. The communique, agreed by world foreign ministers, does not explicitly demand that President Assad stands down. Hong Kong has sworn in a new leader as it marks 15 years since its return to Chinese rule. Xi Liang has promised to defend civil liberties in the former British colony. Despite his assurances, though, thousands of people have been attending a protest calling for full democracy. European Union countries will no longer import Iranian oil and petroleum from today. The measure is designed to increase the pressure on Iran over its refusal to allow full inspections of its nuclear facilities. And the weather, it should generally be drier and brighter this afternoon. Showers are likely in central and eastern Scotland and across Wales. There'll be more rain for most parts of England and Wales tonight. BBC News and Weather at 1:02.
And it was read by David Cornett. Well, now on Radio 3, the early music show, introduced today by Lucy Skeeping.
Hello and welcome to the show, and highlights today from a concert given in Durham Cathedral at the beginning of June by those leading exponents of Renaissance vocal music, the Tallis Scholars. And there's a little bit of a twist, because alongside music from the late 15th and early 16th centuries, they're also performing a couple of newly composed works written specially for them by the two winners of the 2012 Radio 3 National Centre for Early Music Young Composers Award. But more about that later. Let's hear the Tallis Scholars in familiar territory first, in a motet by Andrea Gabrielli. He's been rather eclipsed these days by his famous nephew Giovanni. But in fact, it's Andrea who should really be called the true founder of the Venetian school. This is his Deus qui Beatum Marcum, written in honour of the cathedral's patron. O God, grant us that we may follow St. Mark's instruction and profit by his teaching. Deus qui Beatum Marcus by Andrea Gabrielli, a motet in honour of St. Mark, performed by the Tallis Scholars. We'll hear more from Andrea Gabrielli in a moment, and later on, music by his nephew Giovanni, by the German composer Hassler, Taverner from England, and Palestrina, and not forgetting the two new works by the competition winners. Here's the Tallis Scholars' founder-director, Peter Phillips.
They now get to hear their pieces performed in a public concert by us in a splendid, splendid place, which is Durham Cathedral in this case. Durham is one of the most awe-inspiring places that I think I've ever stepped into. I mean, York Minster is equally grand, but this is older. It really is an unbelievable space. I mean, acoustically, it's like all very big buildings. It's not particularly helpful. It's a little bit singing out of doors, but that doesn't matter. I mean, we can get that together. And anyway, it's just looking at it. It's very, very inspiring.
It was in 1093 that building began on the cathedral, its west wall right on the edge of a steep gorge beside the River Weir. It took 40 years to complete, and much of the old Norman and Gothic style still survives, along with the restoration done in the 1660s, much needed after the Civil War, when Cromwell used the place to incarcerate some 3,000 Scottish prisoners. Today, though, its inmates are a lively bunch of choristers who will hear later in the Palestrina Magnificat that ends the programme. But now another piece by Andrea Gabrielli. It's rather stately and contemplative, Benedictus Dominus Deus. And it's followed by a motet by Giovanni Gabrielli in praise of the Virgin Mary.